I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, is Seattle ready to put insanity in the rear view? We'll dive into the latest election results. Plus, voters in the nation's wokest school district appear to be doubling down, much to the detriment of students.
And I think things are just going to get worse before they get better. I mean, the Olympia School District will be closing schools.
Also, Attorney General Bob Ferguson trying to distance his office from controversy. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, this is a people-powered podcast. We can't continue to do it without your support. So if you'd like to support the show, you can do that for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And thank you to those of you who joined us for our very fun, what turned out to be a very, very fun live election coverage special report last night. We were on right after the ballots dropped. And so certainly we went over some of the initial results, but we want to revisit some of the key races today. Keep in mind the way our elections work, we're not going to have any updated numbers from the first ballot drop last night at 8 p.m. The next time, by and large, that we'll see a major update is 4 p.m. today. But, you know, I think now that things have settled from last night, an initial sort of excitement or disappointment might be able to sink in a little bit. We can look at the results with a little more clarity and talk about what they actually mean. So let's start, as we often do, in the city of Seattle. Generally speaking, I think one of the themes that we're going to be talking about on the show today is we, you know, really focus on this show about trying to lift up reasonable voices and trying to push away the impact of the fringe voices on policymaking, et cetera. What I'm kind of seeing start to form, if the initial results hold, is a city like Seattle that has, you know, went woke way before everyone else, finally kind of starting to wake up and see the real detriment of that. Meanwhile, what have we always said? You know, Seattle slowly, its tentacles reached out to other areas and influenced policy in other cities to the north and south. And so now I'm afraid that you're starting to see some of these other areas that are adopting the policies of Seattle years after Seattle did and might have their come to Jesus moment a little too late. So let's talk about the results so far. Just the key races in Seattle downtown. The councilman for downtown, Andrew Lewis, is trailing. In fact, every incumbent, all three of them that were on the ballot yesterday, are trailing Andrew Lewis by quite a bit. I will not call any of these races today because we have seen in Seattle 10-point swings on late ballot returns. But this is looking pretty good for Bob Kettle. He's got 56% of the vote. To Andrew Lewis is 44% of the vote. That is certainly something I wanted to see. I hope this result holds. There have to be consequences for someone like Andrew Lewis, who has had such high-profile flip-flopping on life-or-death issues. He flip-flopped on police defunding. He flip-flopped on recriminalizing drug possession. Even though Bob Kettle, I don't know the guy very well. I don't know how much of a departure he would be from Andrew Lewis for downtown Seattle. But at the very least, there have to be consequences when your policies erode your district in the way that his have. So we're watching that. Also, really good news, I got to say, for Team Common Sense out of District 2 in the city of Seattle. Tammy Morales is a Democratic socialist. She has really abandoned huge swaths of her district, and she's been called out even by members of the Democratic Party for being completely absent. You know, District 2 represents two critical areas in Seattle, the Chinatown International District and South Seattle. South Seattle is where we see a lot of the shootings. Where has she been? Why isn't she talking about public safety? In Chinatown International District, you have all these Asian Americans who feel completely left behind by her to deal with homelessness and the resulting crime and quality of life issues. So Tammy Morales is losing. 45% of the vote. Tanya Wu, who is a much more pro-business, pro-public safety candidate, has 54% of the vote. Let's hope to God that that holds. All right, District 6, I'm including this because it is the third incumbent that was on the ballot. I don't think he's the most dangerous of the incumbents. However, he also flip-flopped on police defunding. He ran in 2019. 2018 saying, "Yay, police, we need more officers." 6 months later, under pressure from activists, he pledged to defund SPD. I don't think there's room for flip-flopping of that magnitude on the Seattle City Council. So Dan Strauss is losing to Pete Hanning, but not by very much. This is a race that certainly could go the other direction. Dan Strauss has 49% of the vote. Pete Hanning has 51% of the vote. District 6 is sort of includes the Ballard area of Seattle, which has had immense issues related to homelessness, and Dan Strauss has been criticized for not addressing them more directly. All right, one more Seattle City Council race that I want to touch on, and that is because it is, I think, the most high-profile district in terms of the person who currently occupies the seat is socialist Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawant. Remember, she opted not to seek re-election, which is just great news. So the question is, well, will they choose someone just as crazy as her to replace her? It seems like the answer is most definitely not. Joy Hollingsworth is winning in D3 with 58% of the vote, and she was by far the more pragmatic option, and she is going to be a night and day difference to Shama Sawant. A night and day difference. She has deep ties to the difference. She has deep ties to the community. And that's really what D3 deserves. They've had a councilwoman who has been more focused on her own personal political star within the National Socialist Movement and doesn't care at all about the people of District 3. So Joy Hollingsworth, I think that is awesome. That is such a huge change for that district. This, by the way, so when we look at all seven races in Seattle, seven of nine council seats were on the ballot. In every race, the more moderate candidate is prevailing after the first ballot count. That doesn't mean a couple of them can't change. They most certainly can. But I think that is great news. And voters are outright rejecting some of the most fringe candidates who were on the ballot. So let's get to our daily subscriber poll question. That's what it had to do with. The question I posed to you on Patreon and Locals, after an initial ballot drop, comparably, let's be honest, I don't know if they're moderate compared to a lot of us. Comparably moderate candidates have the lead in all seven Seattle City Council races. If early results hold, are you optimistic that the new council will pursue a significant course correct? And I do realize that that is, I think, open to your own interpretation about what a significant course correct might look like. But sometimes I think it's nice to have poll questions that are a little bit open to interpretation. So a lot of you on Patreon and Locals are saying yes, but you are cautiously optimistic, as you should be, because some of these races could change. Kevin says, yes, but a course correction for Seattle does not mean sanity, however, which is a very good point. We're actually going to talk about it in our closing sanity check today. It's the reason the title of our show today is Hold Your Horses, which I was very proud of. Nicole's like, you're an old lady. Lisa says, I answered no, as I'll have to see it to believe it. Fingers crossed. And that's fair, too, which is, you know, you could have new council members in Seattle, but it's just a different shade of progressive. So are they actually going to have the political will to make some of the changes that need to be made? Jackie says, I want to answer maybe. The changes in the council could be a course correct, but we don't know if they will sway with the loudest voice until we get further down the line. A course correct only happens if the new people can stick to their guns on issues instead of catering to the loudest voice in the room. And that is also so true. You know, Andrew Lewis had shown glimpses of sanity, but then you get a few people in the room in front of him who yell really loud and scare him, and he completely changes his entire worldview in split second. So yeah, it does matter. Do they have a backbone? Are they willing to stand up to people who will come and be angry with them and call them names and call them right wing and whatever it might be? All right, let's see. I want to actually read an answer that is from someone who is admittedly not a Seattleite, but as we've said, impacts you. Danielle says, although I am a Pierce County resident, as we know, the King County trickle effect happens. The short answer to the question is yes, I'm optimistic. However, it always seems to start this way, moderates with the lead, and then a major shift happens, swinging things back to highly progressive, and it all stays the same or gets worse. Cautiously optimistic is a more truthful answer, and I think that that is a good thing to be, cautiously optimistic, given the way some of these races work. So the next major ballot drop will happen at 4 p.m. There are a few of these races where if it were any other city, I'd be like, yeah, let's just call them. But given the history in Seattle, as was just laid out by Danielle, I think it's just there's no point in jumping the gun and calling races. I saw some people doing that on social media. I was like, there's no point to that. All right, let's get outside of Seattle for a moment. As I mentioned, sort of a theme of this episode is, gosh, are now you going to start to see other cities and other areas that have been slowly impacted by Seattle policies start to go down that path and witness the same thing Seattle did? You know, there were several election cycles in Seattle where I thought, oh my God, surely they're going to change course. And they just kept digging in and things kept getting worse. And then are you finally seeing the result of that? And so maybe some of these areas are at the cusp of what Seattle was 5 years ago. Like, hey, let's experiment with some of these wacky, crazy policies and see what road it takes us down. So I'm really worried right now about Snohomish County and the sheriff's race. Adam Fortney is trailing Susanna Johnson. He's got 48% of the vote to 52% of the vote. Now, that is still a gap that is closable, certainly. But you tend to see more progressive candidates do better in late voting. That's not always the case. Republicans have been on this bender of, oh, let's hold our ballots till the last minute. I don't know. It's disappointing to me because Adam Fortney, you know, despite the fact they painted him as right wing and whatever, he's been doing good things for public safety. And isn't that, at the end of the day, all you want from your sheriff? Is that he's improving public safety? And I don't know that you could argue, and they haven't, by the way, that hasn't been an argument that's been had, that he hasn't done good things for public safety. They're just focusing on, oh, you know, personnel decisions he made years ago, or things he said, or somebody he had at a campaign event. And so, you know, when you have someone who the other side really can't ding him for the improvements on a bipartisan basis with bipartisan coalitions of mayors that he's made to public safety, the fact that he might lose his job to someone who's much further to the left, who's been supported by fringe Democratic groups, that's really concerning to me. And I would hate to see Snohomish County lose some of the gains that it's made on public safety. However, I remain optimistic. So we'll wait till this next ballot drop. All right. From Seattle to Snohomish County, all the way over to Spokane, hitting all the major S's today. The Republican mayor of Spokane, Nadine Woodward, is trailing in Spokane to Lisa Brown, who Democrats have put up for, gosh, you name the political office, she's run for it. And not successfully. And then she landed in Jay Inslee's administration as the head of commerce during the pandemic, where she made some questionable decisions. But Lisa Brown is up 52% of the vote to 48% of the vote. That could change too. I mean, that's not a race that anyone has called so far. And we'll certainly see what happens again with late returns. But that would be just another disappointment. I mean, Lisa Brown, again, an Inslee appointee who has tried and tried and tried to get into public office and failed over and over and over again. I just don't understand why Spokane. We'll talk later on about an overwhelming vote in Spokane to criminalize homelessness near, you know, not homelessness, but camping near places where kids are. And so you have Spokane residents that clearly don't want their, you know, they want to do something about the homeless crisis and crime, but then they're going to put a Democrat in the mayor's office. And not just that, like a Democrat with ties to Governor Jay Inslee. That doesn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, Nadine Woodward had some self-inflicted wounds, like appearing with Matt Shea at a prayer event, who's just truly, I don't use the phrase far right wing fringe very often, but he truly is. And you know, maybe that really hurt her. But again, too close to call. So I'm going to talk about some measures and propositions that are all really fascinating to me. And I want to apologize to you for not covering them more extensively on the show. We talked about one of them, Proposition 1 in Seattle, but we didn't talk at all about the other two. And I really wish we would have in hindsight. Proposition 1 in Seattle, as we discussed on the show, voters in Seattle got to decide whether they wanted to triple their housing levy, an expiring housing levy, triple it to raise $970 million over the next 7 years to pay for more affordable housing. 66% of Seattle voters are saying, sure, go ahead. 34% saying no. So obviously that housing levy is going to be renewed. So if you own a medium-priced home in Seattle, then your tax is going to jump from about $108 a year to $360 a year. And it's not so much about that. I mean, it is about the money, but it's also about what is that money going to? And more affordable housing is not the answer to homelessness. So if you're voting for that, thinking that it's going to solve the homeless crisis, it's not. That money would be much better spent on trying to deal with drug addiction, on increased law enforcement, on helping, you know, fix our broken mental health system. Throw in another $1 billion at the homeless industrial complex. I cannot believe that Seattle voters continue to do that. All right. Measure one in Tacoma is a really unfortunate one that it even is on the ballot, but, you know, democracy, yay. So this has to do with really mimicking some of the terrible landlord-tenant laws that Seattle put into place, and even in some instances, taking it further. So Measure one, which at this stage is failing, thankfully, but ever so slightly, way too close to call. 49% are in favor of passing it. 51% are opposed. And here's why 51% of people so far are opposed. It would ban landlords from evicting anyone during cold weather months. You also couldn't evict anyone during the school year if the household has students, even if they don't pay rent. Also, if you as a landlord want to raise rent by more than 5% and your tenant can't afford it, you would have to pay 2 months worth of rent to help them relocate. That's insane. And really, for as much as you hear progressives talk about affordable housing, we need more affordable housing, you're scaring away all the landlords who provide affordable housing. The big time landlords, they can survive this kind of stuff. The mom and pop landlords who have, you know, rooms for rent in their home or a spare unit in their home or whatever it is, they cannot afford this. Small-time landlords who maybe have one or two units that are out in the marketplace. So this is really ridiculous. I am very hopeful that this fails in the city of Tacoma. All right, one more proposition in Spokane. Overwhelming common sense for voters with this proposition. So it would ban camping within 1,000 feet of schools, parks, playgrounds, and childcare facilities. And I'm sort of like, who's the 25% that's like, yeah, let's get some homeless camps next to schools and parks? 75% are saying, yeah, we want that policy. 25% are saying no. And so I think that tells you that there are some things that really do resonate as just plain old common sense with people across the ideological spectrum. But I look at that and I'm kind of like, well, how is Nadine Woodward losing in the mayor's race when you're talking about Democrats, many of whom would be more than fine with allowing homeless encampments to thrive near a school playground? All right, we're going to talk about some more election results, specifically what happened in America's Wokest School District down in Olympia. There were some really positive results in school board races across the state, which we'll highlight, but the Olympia School District seems to be doubling down on its failed policies that do not put the education of kids first. So we'll get to that coming up next. But first, as we talk about the state of the economy, whether you are just starting to save for retirement or whether you are nearing retirement, it is so important right now. Please heed these warnings to make sure that your hard-earned retirement is protected against risk in this economy. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, who joins us every Thursday on the show, he has been talking about his fear about what Bidenomics is setting up the economy for.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly. Right now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows. Right. But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything. Right.
So here's a really good opportunity. If you're like, I don't know if I could do a wealth manager right now. Zach Abraham is having his final live webinar of the year on Thursday, November 16th, and it's completely free. I mean, this is a great opportunity to take advantage of some free advice on how to manage your risk in this economic environment from an expert. You can learn about how Bulwark's risk management strategy and active management is right now protecting retirement portfolios against loss. Again, it's free. The final live webinar of the year, Thursday, November 16th at 3 p.m. There are limited spaces, though, and it fills up fast. So reserve your spot now at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Nicole, do we want to comment really quick on some breaking news reports?
I think we've got some listeners that are
talking about it in the comments. So there are some reports that a couple elections offices are being evacuated.
King County, Pierce, and Spokane County.
Yeah, so we are monitoring that, hoping that it's nothing serious, but it is something that is going on right now. And so as we get more information on that, we'll certainly update you guys. And, you know, it's so dumb. I mean, people in the threats against election offices or whatever it is, it's like, come on, for the love. So we will monitor that. We know about it. Yes. Thank you for telling us in the comments. We just want to make sure that we're not creating undue panic until we have information that is absolutely bulletproof and confirmed. All right, let's continue with some of the election results. You know, I saw the King County or the Washington State Republican Party, they sent out an email this morning. And one of the things that they had tried to do across the state this election cycle is get more heavily involved in school board races, which you don't hear a lot about. You hear more and more about school board races because they become kind of part of the culture wars. But you had the Washington State Republican Party that said that it really invested heavily both in time and resources in 36 school board candidates across the state. And they said that their candidates are doing pretty well. So of the 36 campaigns that the Washington State Republican Party supported, they said 30 are currently winning, 4 races are too close to call, and only 2 are trailing. And they said that this is a really great win rate, and they're really proud of what happened. That, however, did not translate to the Olympia School District, which we've talked about so much on the show. It's because the Olympia School District, to me, is the model of what not to do. If you want to prepare kids for life. And they have, and we've done many, many stories and broken a lot of exclusives about what's happening in the Olympia School District around race, you know, political agendas, social agendas, gender ideology. And unfortunately, in Olympia, they're just doubling down on the same direction. And it's just going to be bad for kids. So we'll talk about a couple of the key races. And then we'll be joined by Alicia Perkins, who's an Olympia School District mom who's been fighting the good fight every step of the way. So Olympia School District Board Position 1, the incumbent Maria Flores is winning against Talana Reed. Now, both of these are bad options, right? I will say if there's one little silver lining, it's that Talana Reed, who went around calling cops pigs and telling people to burn or to destroy the city and riot or whatever, is not going to be on the school board anymore. She'd been appointed to a position and then she ran for this position. But Maria Flores, honestly, she doesn't say that level of crazy stuff, but she's the incumbent and she's responsible for the same kind of policies and discussions that we've been complaining about on the show. So she's winning by quite a bit, 65% of the vote. All right, let's go to board position 4. Again, the incumbent is winning, Hillary Seidel. So that's just more of the same. Leslie Van Lieshout, who is the challenger, just has 38% of the vote. Hillary Seidel, 61% of the vote. All right. There was one race on the ballot that didn't have an incumbent. And I think this was an opportunity to have, no matter what, it was going to be a change, right? But were parents willing to put someone in there who really wanted to focus on education? The answer appears to be no. And I want you to familiarize yourself with the name of the candidate in this race for position 2, who's winning, because we're going to end up talking about her quite a bit on the show. I think she went under the radar because of Talana Reed's insanity, but it turns out she's got some insanity of her own. But Frank Durocher, who really seemed to be laser focused on improving educational outcomes, he is trailing 44% to 56% for progressive candidate Jess Turtelot Palumbo. So I haven't talked on the show about Jess Turtelot Palumbo, I think because we were so focused on some of the other races, but I want you to meet what will probably be the Olympia School Board's newest member.
My name is Jess Turtelot Palumbo, Olympia School Board candidate for District 2. And there's been a lot of conversation about safety and about SROs being put back into schools and taking the words police and renaming them into around engagement, around collaboration and public safety. And while I understand the intention behind this, and at first, I'm going to be completely honest, as a white person, like my first thought was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And then like I took a couple more seconds, and I was like, that's not an interesting idea at all. That's an idea that I feel like is creating space for white folks to feel safe or to feel good about doing something about the racism within law enforcement. And it doesn't take away from the fact that law enforcement and SROs come from the seed of racism. And you can rename them something, and you can try to create different branches, but if that seed is still there, it's going to create the same problem. And that same problem is going to tell our students who are marginalized who have disabilities, who come from the BIPOC community, that their safety is less important, that they don't matter. And they do matter, and it's not just that they matter, it's that they're phenomenal. They have incredible voices and are amazing leaders, but we don't say that enough, right? Like, we don't tell that enough. And by voting SROs into schools, we are going to silence them. And we are going to cause fear.
Do you hear that? Do you hear that, Nicole? Listen closely. Do you hear it? That's the sound of me dying a little bit inside. Why? 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 That is Jess Turtelot Palumbo, who is going to be the newest member of the Olympia School Board, who is winning handedly over a guy who seems, by all accounts, very rational and normal and wants to, oh my gosh, the horror, focus on educational outcomes. And this is what we're going to get. More of the same in Olympia, America's wokest school district, doesn't want cops in schools, even though they've had a ton of issues at Capitol High School related. I mean, what was it? Three issues in the first week of the year, two weeks of the year campus. With guns truly insane stuff. So anyway, we asked Alicia Perkins to join us today. Alicia Perkins, not only are both she and her husband alum of the Olympia School District, they have now sent four kids through the Olympia School District. And she started a couple years ago trying to take it upon herself to expose some of the things that were happening there around political and social agendas. She started a really good Substack you should check out called OSD Rescue, where she details some of this stuff. And so I asked her to come on knowing that she would probably be pretty disappointed in the results from last night. Alicia Perkins, how many drinks did you have last night?
I mostly had some coffee, you know, to try to get through it. Had a little headache, but I'm here.
Yeah, we laugh so we don't cry. This is really, I've got to imagine for you as a parent who wants to get back to quality education, worst case scenario.
It is. I knew we were in an uphill battle. I knew that the primary results were very similar. So it was going to be really, really difficult to either change those votes or get more people out. And we just didn't.
Yeah. Well, and I should say, maybe not worst case scenario, because it looks like Talana Reed, at least, will no longer be on the school board. So given that that was really her extreme views and her extreme statements, that's got to be a little bit of a relief.
It is a relief. She's now run for two positions in the city and lost. So hopefully the voters have told her, you know, you can't be in charge of anything. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. But then I'm turning my sights now to this Jess Turtelot Palumbo. We just played a video that she posted. I think she went under the radar for us just because Talana Reed was so, so extreme. But it sounds like she holds a lot of the same views about police and education.
Yeah. And she and Talana Reed actually campaigned throughout together. So they have the same ideology. It's going to be the same thing. And it's really unfortunate because Frank DeRozier, who was running for what Jess appears to be winning on, would have been a much more moderate, balanced candidate. And now we're going to end up with the same thing.
Yeah. How do you make sense of that? I mean, when I watched that video that again, we just played, and I'm thinking, gosh, how can any rational person want that individual on a school board versus Frank, who, you know, is focused on what I feel like every parent should want their school board focused on, quality educational outcomes. How do you make sense of it?
Well, it looks like there was about a 28% voter turnout for OSD elections. So that means that, you know, 70% of actual registered voters are not voting. So I don't know the answer to whether they're just apathetic at this point, or they genuinely don't know this information still, which is, you know, getting hard to believe because the Olympia School District has been covered locally. You've done it extensively nationally. These are not minor issues that have been covered. These are absolutely crazy things that have been happening. So for people not to know or still vote for the same thing is just puzzling.
Well, and maybe it's that we genuinely cannot put ourselves in their minds and in their shoes and really understand that worldview. I mean, I know I have a really hard time understanding how people can vote for some of the candidates that they do. If it's, you know, intentional, like, yes, I support everything they say and do. Or if it's just, oh, you know, her name looks cool. Let me circle in the ballot for her. So what do you do from here, Alicia? You know, you have dedicated so much time and energy to trying to rid the Olympia School Board of this sort of ideology, only to see it prevail time and time again. What do you do from here?
Well, I think from here, you know, I do need to think of this as baby steps that you know, sometimes it takes multiple election cycles to really have people understand what's going on and change things. So I think that we have really, this movement has awakened many people as to what's going on in school boards, and it might take a couple election cycles. And I think things are just going to get worse before they get better. I mean, the Olympia School District will be closing schools probably within the next year is their estimate because of the decline in enrollment. And one thing that they will not acknowledge is that a large part of that decline in enrollment are students actually leaving because of them, because of they've become too political, too ideological, too crazy. And until they acknowledge that, this is just going to keep happening. And if we just keep voting in the same people, these are the exact same people that have overseen the massive decline in the Olympia School District over the last few years. They voted in the same thing. So there's a part of me that's like, well, we have to respect that. That's obviously what Olympia voters want. So you can have it. You know, and then from here, I think it's just still a matter of informing people, keeping on it, holding them accountable for the kids that are still there.
Yeah. So I can take it to that to mean that you're still in the fight.
I'm still in the fight. You know, my last one graduated in June. She actually just joined the Marines. So we're going to be shipping her off soon. A message that I've always tried to give people is that this is not just a parents' fight. This is a community fight. Communities are in charge of their local school district. Taxes pay for the local school district. You need to know what's going on. You need to hold them accountable. You need to demand fiscal responsibility. It is a community involved endeavor. And so, it can't just be like parents are in charge of this. And if we could get that message out that, you know, we need you, even if you don't have kids, to care about your community schools, that's, you know, something that I'm going to still be pursuing.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. Well, you've just been invaluable for us as we navigate sort of some of these stories, and what you've exposed has been really important. And I think you're right that this is baby steps. And we saw Seattle get much worse before. Hopefully it's getting better with these latest election results. And so, you know, maybe that's the case in Olympia. Well, Alicia, thank you. And also, when you send your youngest off to the Marines, give her a big hug from all of us, a thank you, and then a hug and tell her to be safe.
Thank you, Brandy, so much for everything.
Yeah, we appreciate Alicia Perkins trying to, you know, keep what's happening in the Olympia School District in the public spotlight. Again, you should check out her Substack, OSD Rescue. She has a lot of good stuff on there. But I could just see she's beaten down. She's just, I don't blame her. I mean, she's put so much work in, and to see that school district continue to go the way of activism is so, so incredibly disappointing. And it has real, real consequences and implications. I just want to note, we continue to follow this breaking story. This isn't a breaking news show. There's a reason for that. But, you know, because things could update and people can watch the show back. But we will just say that we are aware of what's happening, not only in King County elections, also over in Spokane. And it appears one other district, is it down in, what's the other one? Seattle
Pierce.
Or Pierce. There's been some evacuations at the elections headquarters. It sounds like there are reports of a white powdery substance. So we're monitoring it. First responders are on scene at all of the locations. There's been evacuations. News media is on scene. So hoping that no one has been hurt and that it's not a real, real threat to individuals, but just unfortunate to see that happen. And I don't know how that is going to impact ballot counts and the ballot drop that is supposed to happen at 4 p.m. today. But honestly, that's the least of my concerns with this going on right now. So we continue to monitor it. All right. We talk a lot on the show about the state of the economy and how that translates to the real estate market. And if you want to or maybe need to put your home on the market, you might be concerned given the state of the economy and interest rates that right now is not a good time. But actually, home prices have been steadily ticking up, which sounds a little counterintuitive. We asked our friend Wes Jones of Wes Jones and Associates why that is happening.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah, and that certainly doesn't mean that the real estate market is the best it's ever been. I think we all know it's not. But one of the really good tools that Wes Jones and his team offer is just a free market analysis. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, get in touch with Wes Jones and ask for that market analysis so you can see if your home is well positioned to hit the market. You can also start by using their home value calculator. Plug in your address. You can see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General of Washington State, also a candidate to become the next governor of Washington State, is desperately trying to counter the narrative that his office is pushing to have things hidden from you. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, I've said on the show that in the last couple months, I think one of the, what I believe really is a huge political scandal emerged tied to Governor Jay Inslee's carbon tax. So as you know, I don't know if there's a single policy that the government has lied more about than the carbon tax, the cap and trade program. Governor Jay Inslee lied, saying it wouldn't raise gas prices if it did. It would just be pennies. Of course, that's not the case. When he found out he couldn't lie anymore because the carbon tax went into effect and immediately gas prices shot up. And for the first time in history, Washington State had some of the highest gas prices in the nation. Then he turned around and blamed big oil, saying they were just trying to stick it to us, which is weird. Are we the only state, us in California, that big oil is trying to stick it to? And then there was this kind of little gem of a story that, honestly, it can seem like insider baseball and a little like politically nerdy, but I thought it was such a big deal and such a scandal because we've seen how the carbon tax is affecting all these different things. One of the other things that it affected is Puget Sound Energy rates. Puget Sound Energy had gone to, as we reported on the show, had gone to the Utilities Commission and said, hey, we need rate hikes because of the carbon tax. And the Utilities Commission, acting on the advice from the Attorney General's office, opted to prohibit Puget Sound Energy, or advise Puget Sound Energy, not to put that as a line item on your bill. That the carbon tax was going to increase your rates through Puget Sound Energy. And the depths of really, I think, how wrong that is for the government to not only have lied about the implications of this policy from the very beginning, but then try to cover those implications from you when it comes to something as important as your pocketbook. So anyway, this is, I think, a real gift to state Republicans, because it should be something that no matter where you fall on the ideological spectrum bothers you when the government wants to hide the reason and lie about the reason why your bills are getting higher. So on Twitter yesterday, the Washington State Senate Republicans sent out a tweet reminding people about this story. I don't blame them. I'd be just singing about this till the cows come home. They said, after Governor Inslee said Democrats' new carbon taxes would only cost pennies, gas went up $1. Now, Attorney General Bob Ferguson advised making it illegal to show the tax's impact on your utility bill. So immediately, Bob Ferguson, which I'll say he doesn't do this very often. It's not often that he slides into the comments to try to defend himself, but he slid into the comments on this post using his official account saying, this is false. For anyone interested in what our public counsel unit actually said, you can read the letter here. And then he included just a page of the advice the Attorney General's office gave the State Utilities Commission. And he highlighted just a line of it that said, "We believe the issue of whether to itemize these charges and credits on bills requires more discussion in upcoming workshops." Here's the reality. Both of them aren't telling the full truth. If I go back to, again, Nicole, if you could pull up that last graphic. Yep. If you go back to the Senate Republicans tweet, I don't think this is fully factually accurate either. When they say that Attorney General Bob Ferguson advised making it illegal to show the tax's impact on your utility bill, it would be more accurate to say his office did, and specifically the Office of Public Counsel. But also, they didn't say you should make it illegal to show it. They advised against it. But generally speaking, what they're saying is true. And for Bob Ferguson to selectively say, "Well, that's not true. Read what we said," and then highlight just one line when he could have highlighted some lines just above it where his public counsel unit explicitly was saying, "We don't think this is a good idea." The full piece of advice says, "Public counsel is concerned with PSE's proposal to itemize the state carbon reduction charge and state carbon reduction credit on customers' bills. In general, program-specific line items on customers' bills should only be used when including the line item is specifically beneficial to customers. PSE does not provide a reason for itemizing in its filings. If all program-specific charges were included as a line item, customer bills would quickly become incomprehensible," but then they include this throwaway line, "We think this requires more discussion in workshops." But really what's happening here is a public counsel unit that is, in all of their words and advice, saying this isn't a good idea, we don't think you should do this, but then taking the coward's way out and saying, "Let's workshop it." No, you're the public counsel unit of the Attorney General's office. It is quite literally your job to advise this commission on what they should do. And you're offering that advice, but then to get yourself off the hook, to get the Attorney General's office off the hook from being the ones to have made that advice sort of the way that it was going to go, you just say, "Yeah, but let's workshop it. We really don't think you should do this. Hey, but let's workshop it." No, you make the decision. You give the advice. If you think it's a bad idea, say it and own it. But you don't want to own it because you know it's not going to be popular to do. And frankly, this conversation shouldn't even be happening. We should not have publicly paid attorneys in the Attorney General's office advising a state commission to hide information from you on a Puget Sound Energy bill that would explain why your bill is getting higher. Puget Sound Energy should not have to ask permission to put a line item on your bill explaining why your rates are going up. I mean, that is government bureaucracy ridiculousness at its finest. I don't blame Bob Ferguson for wanting to distance himself in the middle of a gubernatorial campaign and distance his office from just how bad this is. But no, just by highlighting one line that paints the advice your office gave in the best possible light does not get you off the hook. And it's unbelievable that you would think it does. All right, we can talk about First Mark Insurance. Everyone needs insurance. Every single person who watches or listens to this show needs insurance, has insurance. What if I told you you could kick the big box companies and you could work with a local company that you never pay a dime to get better insurance and maybe even get a better price? I've been talking about First Mark Insurance because Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. We took the First Mark Challenge in the spring. We're so happy we did. It does take a time investment on the front end. You have to meet with them. We did it virtually. Go through your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs and your goals. They'll go out, they'll take a couple weeks, they'll shop the market for you, and then they'll come back with their recommendations. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, also a Marine veteran. I like to add that because I think it speaks to just the quality of the service that you're going to get from this company. He says, yeah, price is important. A lot of people want to save money on insurance, but there's a lot of other things we bring to the table.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, but it's going to take a little time investment on the front end. It's going to pay dividends on the back end, because every single year, First Mark Insurance is working on your behalf, not for insurance companies. They're reviewing all your policies, making sure they still fit your needs, making sure you're still getting a good price. If not, they're going out proactively, shopping the market for you. I'm telling you, working with First Mark is one of the best decisions Mike and I have made for our household. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge. They work for you. All right, dipping outside Washington State for a moment, although there is, as there usually is, a little bit of a Washington tie. This is pretty remarkable. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib has been censured by the House, and this was a bipartisan effort. So you might recall that Democrats banded together to protect her from a censure that Republicans put forth. I believe it was last week. But this time, there were 22 Democrats in Congress who were not interested in standing by Rashida Tlaib, who's the only Palestinian American in Congress. They weren't interested in standing by and defending her, given just how vitriolic some of her comments and posts have been about what's happening between Israel and Hamas. So there were 22 House Democrats who joined with Republicans to censure Rashida Tlaib, which is just one step below expulsion from Congress. Two of them are from Washington State. Marie Perez, who represents the Vancouver area, she's the newest member of Congress from Washington State, a Democrat, and then Congresswoman Kim Schreier of the 8th Congressional District. And that's I would say it's still a purple district, although she's won it a couple times now. So look, that might be strategic. Both of them are in districts that I wouldn't say are particularly solid congressional districts for Democrats. So maybe they realize that they need to stand up to this sort of vitriol because it wouldn't go over well in their districts. Or maybe they just really have a moral backbone on the issue, and they're not going to, they would, you know, speak out against that level of anti-Semitism on the right. So I'm not going to gauge whether I think this is politically motivated on their part. But I will say I thought it was really good to see. Now, there is sort of a slippery slope here. And there were even some Republicans who were hesitant to censure Rashida Tlaib for her speech because they don't want to be censured for their speech either. And I do get that. But I think there are certain things that you can say and do as a member of Congress that have a deep impact on the country, on our military, on foreign relations. And some of what she's done really can serve to hurt our relationship with Israel. You know, one of the things I think that bothered me the most that she did is when the quote unquote bombing of the hospital happened in Gaza, and you had outlets and a lot of disinformation out there saying that it was Israel that bombed a hospital and killed 500 people, including a lot of kids. Well, it turns out it was a misfire of a terrorist rocket and it hit the parking lot. But even long after it became clear that this was not a bomb from Israel and that 500 people weren't killed, long after that, Rashida Tlaib continued to spread that false narrative. She continued to spread what was essentially terrorist-driven disinformation. That is dangerous. That is dangerous for the United States and our position on the world stage and for our relationship with our allies when you have a member of Congress spreading disinformation that one of our allies bombed a hospital with kids in it. So that kind of stuff to me, yes, I value free speech. I understand that you cannot have speech from members of Congress continually censured because you disagree with their politics. This rises above politics. It really does. It rises above politics and it gets into relationships with other countries. And so I'm glad that 22 Democrats, many of them are Jewish. And so perhaps that motivated their reason in some of the things that she said. They also took issue in the censure had to do with her continued use of the phrase from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, which some people rightfully see as a call for the erasure of the Jewish state. And obviously that would include, I would assume, the widespread death of Jewish people who live there. So really remarkable bipartisan censure of Congresswoman Tlaib. Some members of Congress are still standing behind her, but I think that this was necessary. Glad to see 22 Democrats agreed. All right, before we get to questions and comments, just another excuse to show you a picture of how good I look. So humble, So humble. I was saying today, man, I'm looking good today. But it's just because I'm so happy with my Eastside weight loss clinic results. I just heard from a friend who started the program a few months ago, and they're just done. There's a little kind of period where you take 30 days off. And she said, I only gained 2 pounds back, and I'm just out living my best life. And so she really feels like the results are going to be something that she can keep up. And that's how I felt as well. You know, I lost almost 30 pounds in just 2 months on the program. And that was through the holidays, through Thanksgiving, and through Christmas. So while everyone waits till January 1st to start their weight loss journey, I didn't. Last year, I started it November 1st, and I'm so glad I did. And I've heard from so many of you who've had fantastic results on the program. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routine. It just teaches you what to eat in the right portion and how to keep it off for life. So start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. I had someone in the comments say, Brandy, take a breath. You're talking so fast. Do I talk fast?
Some days faster than others, but yes, sometimes you get going.
Get going. They're like, take a breathe. All right, let's all take a breath together. Nicole, you want to take a breath with me? No, you got to in through the nose. Hold it. Out the mouth. Wasn't that nice, everyone? See? Yeah, we all have to remember to breathe. Nicole's yes. Like, great. Sergeant Pickles says, I have decided when I can't find info on candidates, I'm going to default to the minority party or non-incumbents. I think that's a great idea. I mean, I think you should do research on the candidates or just not vote.
Because I think that's what's wrong here is people just vote for who they're told to vote for and right. They don't do their diligent research and
yes.
And actually like watch videos like this of the council or the school board member.
Yeah, you're telling me like, if every voter who voted in that race would have seen that video that they would have voted for her
to be in charge of their child's education or to help dictate their child's
education. I would hope not.
No.
I do, Sergeant Pickles, like that strategy if it's state legislative races. Because you have one party rule. So if you're like, I'm just going to vote for the Republican because I'd rather have a check on power. I think that's
fair.
Fine.
But I've told you before, but I'm off the everybody should vote bandwagon. No, everybody should vote if you're doing the work. You have to do the work to vote.
Yes. Sorry, I had a news tip come in. I was wondering if it was urgent.
They're back to counting ballots. It appears that it is likely baking soda.
Baking soda. Okay, with the threat. But well, let's hope.
Let's hope. And then it wasn't in a ballot. It was in an envelope, and it was not direct. There was a note, but apparently it wasn't about anything that they have deciphered yet.
Okay. All right. So we'll continue to follow that, but that's good that nobody was hurt. All right, Andy Stevens, Snowco is going to have to feel some progressive pain to go back to the middle. Yeah, let's hope that happens quickly. Sergeant, like you put two right in a row from Sergeant Pickles.
Oh, you know
what? Spread the love around, Nicole. Not that we don't like you, Sergeant Pickles. I'll still read it.
Hey.
Hot take, only homeowners should be allowed to vote on property taxes. Yeah, yeah. I understand that. Although if you're a renter and you vote on property taxes, technically that would maybe result in your rent going up or down or staying the same or whatever it is.
Which we'll throw to Matthew's comment. Read the next one.
Okay. I don't trust you anymore. I'm just kidding. If I were a landlord, I'd post a flyer at the mailboxes that any past property tax increases could result in a rent increase. Yes, that's very, very, very true. Kyle, I used to have a dream that I'd own some rental properties for passive income. Not a snowball's chance in hell now, at least not in Western Washington. Hey, this measure is losing in Tacoma, so let's not hold your horses, everyone. Let's see what happens. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Shouldn't school board candidates be subject to psych evals? I think everyone should be subject to psych evals if they're in politics. On Patreon, Y says, in regards to Snohomish County Sheriff's race, please, please, Snohomish, vote Fortney back in. I was informed that one of the former sheriffs endorsing his opponent had to leave his sheriff's position due to corruption. And if that's the endorsement she has, it's very questionable. I'm not familiar with that. So I just read a cold comment that might not even be true, but I trust you. Let's see here. Shine the Light says, I wish that citizens would all watch the candidate debates. The debate video locations should be put in the voter's guide for that candidate, in my opinion. Brett says, remember when they stopped counting during the presidential election because of a broken water main that was blocks away? Then all of a sudden Biden gets 60 million votes. Okay. I don't remember that though. Where did they stop counting because of a broken water
main? I don't know about that one.
Or maybe that's just a joke. I don't know. Country Guy says, let's not itemize anything on bills. Just send me a postcard that says, send me money. The little people don't understand things like taxes. And I think that was one of the big things that bothered me about you shouldn't put that on the bill, the itemized item on the bill, because people, it'll just confuse them. Oh, shucks. It'll just confuse us to read that Governor Inslee's carbon tax has led to a rate hike. What's confusing about that?
Right. And nothing is confusing about that. And even the excuse that there might be too many things to itemize or whatever, then put it online. Let people look at it if they want to look at it.
Yeah. And Puget Sound Energy did send eventually a letter to folks letting them know what the rate hike was all about. But that's assuming that when you get your Puget Sound Energy thing, you go through all the leaflets and you read it all. And that's just not the case. I think something that important, having it. And also for the Attorney General's office to say you should only include it as a line item if it's beneficial to customers. Explain that logic to
me. Like if it's a negative.
Yeah.
If
you're getting money, explain that logic to me. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Let's see. I wanted to read a couple comments from locals on our subscriber poll of the day. Jeff says, so the question again was, after an initial ballot drop, more moderate candidates are winning in all seven Seattle City Council races. If the early results hold, are you optimistic that the new council will pursue a significant course correct? Jeff says, key phrase there, if early results hold. The far left has a strange way of surging late in these races. I remember thinking Sawant was out at this point after her recall vote.
Oh, yeah.
They do a lot of voter outreach to the homeless encampments. Okay.
I did a lot of work on her goodbye.
Yes.
And then she didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Weiss Castle says, don't give a crap about Seattle. Trying to worry about comparably moderate progressivism is like solving alcoholism with comparably moderate drinking. Good point. Dr. Sarah 04, I voted yes cautiously. The city has shown through its collective behavior that a lot needs to change to truly achieve a course correct. And I think that is a very good note to get to our closing sanity check for today. So Danny Westneat, he is a columnist for the Seattle Times, and he doesn't think Seattle, after last night, is the most progressive city anymore, and that's why I titled this show, Hold Your Horses, Sir. Hold Your Horses. It's a little too early to make an assertion quite like that. So this is his article in the Seattle Times. Seattle is the most progressive city no more. It says, it was exactly a decade ago that Seattle exploded on the political scene for lefty experimentalism. The outgoing mayor in 2013 had dubbed himself the most progressive mayor in America. The incoming mayor one-upped that by saying he would remake Seattle into the most progressive city in America. That was also the year Seattle elected its first socialist, a heady time of concern about inequality, but also touching off a movement politics marked more by protest and purity than coalition building and compromise. But it's over, Danny Westneat asserts. Seattle is the most progressive city no more. Voters Tuesday were drubbing all that activism in favor of plain old pragmatism. Voters seem to want less idealism, more in the way of results. Danny Westneat, hold your horses. It is not over yet, as many people have pointed out. Not only are the results in these races subject to potential changes that could change the result. But I think it's a huge leap to say after one election, when those individuals haven't even taken office yet, far from it, that Seattle can officially say it's no longer the most progressive city in America. When we talk about these candidates in Seattle, we really are talking about different shades of progressives. There are a lot of tests ahead for these candidates. Even if all of the more moderate candidates win, they are going to be tested, as one person pointed out earlier, they're going to be tested at how they can stand up to activists. Activists that have been very successful in driving the narrative in Seattle for a long time. So there's a lot of tests ahead. It is far too soon to say that the politics of Seattle is going to undergo some sort of major shift. And there's a lot of work to be done before Seattle can finally go down a path of sanity. That has been your sanity check for today, for you, Danny Westneat, at the Seattle Times. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for those of you who watched our live election coverage last night. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who help support our show through their payments of $5 a month. We sure do appreciate every single one of you. If you want to sign up to support our show and our content and our growth, you can do that at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.